Welcome everyone to this exciting panel about the rise of AI in risk engineering. So a lot of people joining and we are really thrilled to get it started. So before jumping into the conversation and the discussion, let me give you some overview of this event. So this event is sponsored by Expert.ai, right, which is the company I'm representing. And I'm Pamela Negosanti. I'm working as head of sales and sector strategy for insurance and financial services. So today I have a great lineup that I will present you in a while. And the objective of this call is really to get a deep dive into what technology is really doing today for the risk engineering department and what we will do, in the future, right? So how things evolved over time, how the type of job evolved, and how, you know, concrete examples and use cases are really providing already benefits to this very specific and narrow department that is key to the insurance domain and to the underwriting department, right? So, and it will be a fireside chat. We will have provocative thoughts, right? So, and a lot of experience that is brought not by me, I'm the last that can bring a lot of insight here. So there's a really, good speakers with tons of experience, right, and very specialized in risk engineering. So be assured that it won't come directly from me, right? Basically, I hope you will enjoy it, right? So, and it's a great opportunity to really listen from experts what's going on, right? And there's a lot that's going on. So I just created some suspense here, but let me jump into the presentation of this great speaker. So I will respect the rules and start with Lady first, right? So we have Deb Savishka, and I hope I pronounce your name properly. And she is Vice President of Research and Consulting at Novarica. So she has an incredible expertise in insurance technology leadership and transformation, with over 25 years of experience, right? So, and before joining Novarica, she spent 8 years as SVP and CIO for claims and loss control at Travelers Insurance, leading courses in modernization, expansion of data analytics capabilities, agile transformation, and digital initiatives related to property casualty claims across all line of businesses. She also served as CIO and CDO at Phoenix Companies, that now is Nassau Re, and she was responsible for all IT functions for life and IT and investment management. So welcome, Deb. Really appreciate your presence here. And just to make like geographic distribution, tell us where you're based.
I'm in a town called Matunuck, Rhode Island in the US.
Good. And I'm in Italy, right? So Italy and US are present here. So let me move to Chris Maguire. So Chris Maguire is the country manager of UK, Ireland, Nordics, and the Netherlands at AXA XL. He is responsible for AXA XL risk consulting team in UK, Northern Europe region, covering multiple lines of businesses. And in his role, he works very closely with clients across a broad range of occupancies, helping them to identify and manage the risk that they face throughout their location globally. And in addition to direct client work, he is also supporting the UK underwriting teams, providing technical input on risk selection and also providing risk quality analysis using both qualitative and quantitative methods. So welcome, Chris, and tell us where you're based.
Thank you very much, Pamela. So I'm based in London in the UK.
Good. So UK is present too. And now let's move to another country. So without spoiling it, but I guess that from the now you can have some doubts. So let me introduce Georg Stockschläger, is risk engineering global practice leader for property at Zurich Insurance. He has a mining engineering background and he started with Chubb Insurance in New Jersey and Germany in 1990. And he then moved to Royal Insurance, that later became Royal Sun Alliance, or RSA, in 1994 to lead the German risk engineering team. And since then, Georg has been with Zurich Insurance. So 4 years of experience in leading the German risk engineering team and then transitioning to the technical center in 2019, as is now the risk engineering global practice leader for property. So welcome, Georg, and tell us where you're based.
Yeah, thanks for having me here. I'm located, like you said, in Germany, very close to Cologne, which is in the kind of Midwest of Germany, close to the Dutch and Belgian border.
Perfect. So coordination is perfect. So we have all the coordinates. So welcome and thank you for joining this this panel. So what I would like to start with is really asking you which is the changes that you're realizing if you look at your job, basically, if we look at the risk engineering function and the work, how it changed over the last year. And Chris, maybe I'm gonna start with you, right? So if you can give us a synopsis, just, you know, how you realize being in the area for many years, how things and the trend that you are realizing is happening.
Sure, no problem. So I think if we look at the way that, let's take the last 10 years as an example and how the job has changed and how the role has changed over that time, I think we've seen some massive changes, really. And you can break that down into the changes that we've seen on the client end. Some new emerging risks that are coming through, things like electric vehicles and the drive towards that, the batteries that we have there and the challenges that we face around that from a risk consulting standpoint. But then on top of that as well, we've also got the complexity that's increasing. So complexity within the individual sites, but also looking at the bigger picture. So things like the supply chains. And really, that's a big area where we're seeing a lot more complexity. And we're also bringing new risks in as well. Things like cyber is really starting to play a part into that. And we need to be thinking outside of the box and really looking at, well, how do we address these risks and how do we help our clients both understand the risks and then manage them properly? And then on top of that as well, we've also got advances in technology that are coming through. I mean, if we look back to 10 years ago, as risk consultants, we sort of were very reliant on having a laptop and a digital camera. And really, we didn't have a huge amount more tech that we were using on a day-to-day basis. Fast forward to where we are now, and we're seeing a lot more technology being used. So we've got things like automation around report reading and report analysis. We've got opportunities to use IoT to look at real-time monitoring of client sites. And there's this drive for more efficiency. So we need to be building into that to ensure that we are being as efficient as possible and evaluating, which is actually coming down to more data. We've got more data coming through, but the same amount of time to actually evaluate it. So how are we able to evaluate that data? Now, I think that it's fair to say that within this last year where we've had COVID coming through, that's been a real driver, and it's really forced us to look at how we're managing things, how we can innovate and how we can come across the challenges that we've faced. I mean, when we consider the insurance industry, and particularly within the London market, it's very much a face-to-face interaction that the industry is based on. And within the space of a couple of months, we were really challenged in terms of how could we continue to work with those clients, whether that's internal in the underwriting side or external, and adapt and find new ways to help them underwrite, to pay claims, and really to be a strong partner for our clients. So that's been a big challenge there. There's been numerous different ways that we've looked at doing it. I mean, from an AXA XL standpoint, we've really tried to capitalize upon this, looking at things like a remote risk dialogue, which is effectively where we're using risk consultants to carry out virtual site visits. And then that data that we're collecting is enabling the clients to continue to address the risks that are coming through, enabling the underwriters to get the information that they need to transfer the risks. And we're able to do that even though we're not physically able to access the site. So I appreciate that was quite a long answer there, Pamela, but I think there's been a massive change. And within the past 12 months, that really has been realized.
Yeah, I didn't mention COVID because I promised myself not to use it as one of the topic, right? But that's, of course, you know, self-explanatory, right? So every job changed in the last 12 months, right? So that, what is your perspective, you know, as having more broader point of view on the entire market and industry, right? So, and extending it, right? So Chris perfectly painted some of the big changes and also mentioned some technologies that are already a reality today, right? But also wanted to understand from you the perspective in terms of broadly speaking.
So I think, you know, a lot of the capabilities that Chris mentioned are clear strategies that insurers want to put into place. I would say there's a wide variety of adoption of technology, particularly in the risk engineering field. You know, I think there's still, particularly in the US, there's still a holdout of very traditional approaches for risk engineering. However, we have seen a very increasing interest from a risk engineering standpoint in data and analytics. That clearly is a way that can help carriers get a much broader and deeper insight into risks. And through, you know, artificial intelligence, machine learning, really helping to serve up those insights to risk engineers so they're not necessarily having to come to all those conclusions or insights on their own. So that's definitely an area we're seeing interest in. You know, the virtual assessment process is something that, again, COVID required. I loved Chris's description of really leveraging that data as part of that virtual process. When risk engineers went on site, that typically wasn't available. So there's actually an analytic benefit that the virtual process is creating. And I think the other thing that I also see in the market is, you know, a greater acceptance of usage of aerial imagery in a variety of ways that imagery is delivered to be able to more quickly and accurately identify potential risks, as well as looking at that risk on an ongoing basis to see how things are changing from an initial assessment. So definitely a lot of shift in the industry. I think, again, adoption is widely varied depending on the market and the characteristics of the carrier.
Good. Thank you, Deb. So indeed, I think that you're adding the point that technology is there, so, and it's kind of mature. So Garrett, I'm following this concept to ask to you, so which is the way technology is supporting you concretely today, right? So in your day-to-day and in your team's activity, right? So in which are basically the main benefits that are provided by technology, right? Some of them were already mentioned. You know, there's the efficiency piece, there's what I call the augmentation, right? So, and that was perfectly described by you, Chris. You said data are growing, right? So, and you cannot read everything. So you're selectively picking some of those data, right? So that's, you know, capacity or augmentation as I like to define it. So Georg, how is technology used today and which are the concrete benefits?
Yeah, thank you. I think there's not much really to add to Chris and Deb, but I mean, tool and procedure wise, I would say what we have seen over the last 10 years are much better tools, much better platforms, which really help us to intensify, you know, the relationship to our customers. It's the one point. The other point, and I think that was also mentioned, it's a massive increase in data quality, yeah, and the ability to really analyze the data that we collect. You asked for concrete, you know, tools that we have. I mean, I think everybody on the market uses central databases nowadays, which are generally available not only to us and to our internal clients, but also to our external clients. But I mean, what I actually observe here with Zurich is an improvement also in the actual on-site work using tools that allow us to put in our findings and then also to find or found deficiencies directly into mobile devices, which allows us then to transfer these data directly into our systems, yeah, without any delay. Yeah. So this is a great great advantage on these tools. But the other thing is, I mean, risk-wise, and I think Chris mentioned that, we all put a huge effort in assessing natural hazards, BI supply chain issues, because they actually lead also our risks or loss statistics nowadays. So that is done, and we use, of course, already, or we offer tools to actually monitor these supply chains, and then to make these data also available to us, and to analyze the whole supply chain.
Good, thank you. You mentioned a very relevant point to me, that is, you know, the customer, right? So the fact that technology enables you basically to get closer to your customer, right? So, and also to offer a better customer experience in many times, because you can reduce the processing time, right? So, and I'm wondering, how is this concretely perceived by customers? Is it something they are demanding, right? So are your customer willing, and is being technology driven an asset for you? That happened to you, Georg, because you started, and then we can round the other way.
Yeah, I mean, that is our experience. Opening our data directly to customers via customer portals, that is a great advantage for our customers. It's not only, you know, having a total overview about policies, terms and conditions in the various countries, financial streams and so on, but they also have a direct access to our risk engineering data. Yeah, you can play around with the data and also have a more interactive access to these data. Yeah? So that's a great advantage, and it's well accepted by our customers.
Good. So basically they are receiving more information about themselves, right? And I think that this is going in a very good direction, that when there's a claim and when there's a loss, it's like a lose-lose situation, right? So no one should be happy about receiving a claim or opening a first notice of loss, right? So, and I think that this, the trend that you're partnering basically with customer is going in the direction of preventing, right, rather than repairing, right? Which is much, much better, right? So are you feeling, Chris, that this is similar to what is happening? So it's a trend.
Yeah, I would completely agree with George's comments there. I mean, whenever we consider the entire product of insurance, it's always better to avoid the loss, not just from an insurance or a risk company's standpoint, but also from the client's standpoint as well. If they can put measures in place to avoid that loss from occurring in the first instance, then that's going to benefit them long term.
Yeah, and that, from your point of view, so is there still skepticism about AI and technology adoption, or it's just, you know, a cliche we have, but it doesn't exist really? So which is your experience towards, let's say, acceptance versus skepticism?
So I would say there is still skepticism from an AI perspective. And I think what I've seen in terms of really eliminating that skepticism is making the main actors in the process, a risk engineer, part of understanding the information that AI brings, being there to train it, to validate it, to adjust it. That makes them part of the process and part of the outcome. And that does help to reduce skepticism. So we've seen that pretty successfully in place in a variety of insurers. And I think that's important, you know, making the people who are delivering the service really understanding what's being shared with them from a data or an analytic perspective is very important, because in some cases it may feel a little bit like, hey, this is replacing my expertise. And I think the objective is certainly not to replace expertise, but to enhance it. And gaining that trust and eliminating that skepticism is, I think, a huge part of adoption, as well as continued maturity, right? Because, you know, models continue to be, need to be trained, situations vary. One of the things we've seen pretty broadly with the pandemic is a lot of models need to be refined because of the situations that were created in the pandemic that weren't there before. So that skepticism by engaging, again, the people in the process, I think can be alleviated. But, you know, I think it's still there.
So you are referring that basically to internal stakeholder skepticism, right? So meaning that people that are somehow scared by technology themselves, and I'm saying, you know, not the final user, so not the customer probably, we are all used to benefit from AI and technology, right? But you still see that there's some internal skepticism and conflict in, let's say, using technology. I think that, you know, probably I've repeated this metaphor many, many times, but I think that one of the best example that was one of your colleague Georg said about technology was like, you know, it's like the Iron Man suits, right? So you wear it and you're empowered, right? And I think that's the right message to me. So, and technology has always to have human in the loop, right? Mainly when it comes to knowledge, right? So, and we work with language. So language is by definition the means where you communicate the expertise, right? So, and because, you know, whether it is an email, whether it is a policy, whether it is a risk report, there's knowledge there, right? So, and it's communicated via language. You cannot replace 30 years of experience. And look, you know, many of the people that are in the audience are risk engineers, right? So, and I'm not challenging them, right, in terms of being able or having deep dive knowledge, because that's a reality, right? And you're also so scarce in terms of resources. There's not thousands and thousands of risk engineers all over the world, right? So your knowledge is so precious, right? But sometimes what I've been told by some risk engineers is that they have still to do some low added value activities, like, yes, for example, going through a risk report and read it and categorize some pieces of it. Of course, this is not, let's say, the added value that you can bring to the process, right? So, and if we can differentiate, I think, and complete, that's the right fit, right? So, but I definitely would do that. So I don't think that it's something that should increase the expertise in terms of making it scalable, right? So we as humans are not scalable, right? So we have to really, the time is a limited resource.
Totally agree.
I think that's a really good point you're making there as well, Pamela, that it shouldn't be seen that these new pieces of technology or AI are there to replace people, but it's to add on to the benefits that we've already got. And completely, as you say, with more data coming through and more analytics required, the more of that that we can automate and use AI for, then frees up the skilled individuals to be able to spend more time with the clients, the customers, doing high value activities.
Totally agree.
I fully agree. I mean, one of the applications that we use, AI application that we use is actually, you know, analyzing third party reports. Yeah. And we route quite a large number of let's say, low, medium hazard reports through these tools. And then that is, of course, a massive release for our risk engineering force, which can then really concentrate on the more complex risks and on really customer services. And then, that is actually the way forward. The funny thing with that is that you actually see the skepticism actually within our own roles. Yeah, people, you know, used to do these third-party risk report analyzers manually. They compare the results directly, and of course you find the one or other deficiency. But looking at the big numbers, our observation is actually AI is more objective. So it's the large numbers are correct. If you look into a very individual case, you may find the one or other issue, but the large numbers are correct, and the results are very, very objective.
I think something as well, Georg, that's worth adding on to that is that if you were to give the same risk report to 10 different engineers, you know, they would all come back with slightly different ideas as to how things should be graded. In most cases, of course, there's always factors which are either good or poor, but whenever you have a spectrum, there's always going to be differentiation amongst the opinion that you have there. I think just touching again on the point that you're making about this reading of third-party reports, even if the risk factors aren't all 100% accurate, what you can start to pick out is the trends there. So if we receive a submission through of, let's say, 50 reports, we would never have time to go through all 50 reports and make a detailed analysis. But what we can do is we can pick out those key areas where there's deficiencies and say, well, let's look into that report in a bit more detail. In the past, that could have been a report that we would have never spent the additional time looking at. Maybe it's a small site or it didn't flag up whenever we were initially looking at the review. So I think that that really is a great benefit of these types of systems, where we can flag up and say, well, this is where we should be spending the expertise and the time.
Yeah, very similar experience. I mean, we use these tools to come up with an indication, and then we can decide where we want to put, you know, manual power into certain critical locations.
Yeah, I think that, you know, there are potential sub-application, and it's what you could, you can use it to prioritize, to triage, for example, but also to I would say it's not only a matter of operational efficiency, but there's a lot of, you know, small opportunities that are not timely managed, right? So if you want to do some market penetration, for example, that could be another angle, right? So being fast is also a winning lever, right, in some markets. And that could, you know, speed up the process and let you understand where you want to go or not, right? So in terms of request for offer or doing some evaluation. So, and then you can have human in the loop that are giving the real added value, right? So of putting the expertise and you know, just taking advantage of what has been done by the brute force of the machine, right? So it's like, you know, you have the hands that are doing the work, but then you keep the knowledge that is the brain, right? So that is still given to the subject matter expert. And, you know, subject matter experts are scarce. That's another point, right? So, and they are not all equal. To your point, Chris, I think that, you know, I have a good story to tell. That was one of the first risk engineering solution we had. We wanted to measure the results, right? So, and we said, okay, let's give the reports to different risk engineers, right? And evaluate the grading, right? So we can measure, it's perfect, right? So, I mean, no doubt, there's no subjectivity. Well, it came out that in 25% of the cases, three risk engineers gave three different grade, right? So out of four that they could assign, right? So, and it's not a surprise because they knew that it was for the technology, so they put even overthinking on it, I think, and that was probably one of the reason, right? But it's like not for specific for the risk engineers. That's very common for every human process, right? So, and not only to different people, but if you give to the same people in different time, and I wouldn't say of the day, but probably, you know, of the week or of the month, you may obtain different results. And it's not because of, you know, skills or competences, it's just because we're human, right? And I think it's also the beauty part of us, right? That I would like to keep, right? So that's definitely, there's a benefit in introducing technology per se as an element of objectivity, right? So that's for sure.
Hey, so, Pamela, you know, from one of the things we talk about from a Novarica perspective is that technology really can only deliver value in three ways: the ability to sell more, the ability to manage risk better, or the ability to operate more efficiently. And what we've just talked about actually can touch on all three levers, which is really impactful, right? So companies that before, you know, you weren't able to do risk assessments for because of the size and the, you know, limited number of risk engineers, now through technology, there's actually more risk engineering that can occur on a wider set of customers. So that's got a benefit to the customer. It's certainly got a benefit to the industry. And that's where, you know, when any kind of tech can hit all three levers, it's pretty impactful.
That's a very good point, Steph.
And I think as well, that point you're making there, Deb, which is I completely agree with, But that's something that really has been highlighted again over these past few months, where that ability to go out and to visit sites, which is the bread and butter of what we do as risk engineers, has been taken away. We've no longer been able to do it. And also, on top of that, the clients that we're dealing with have almost been forced to accept that, okay, if we can't get out and visit the sites physically, what are the alternatives? And that kind of helps us to push forward these alternative ways of thinking, doesn't it? Looking at things like remote risk surveys.
Yep.
What you have to keep in mind, though, is that, I mean, all these tools that we just talked about help, of course, analyzing already existing third-party information. Yeah? But I think also the last 12 months and then the travel restrictions and then all these limitations have shown that there's still a need for, say, like virgin first-hand risk information, where we have to send people out to really, you know, assess risks and gather information to feed the market, or feed not only us but also the market with that kind of risk information. Yeah. That's an important part of risk engineering.
Yeah, I mean, that's definitely true. I think looking forward, we will see more of a blend as to how we approach things. So, okay, the past 12 months aren't going to be an accurate reflection of what we're going to see over the coming years once we're able to get through this pandemic. But what I do think that we will see is more of a tiered approach. So in the past, we would have maybe had the physical site visits or no site visits, whereas now we might see a blend of remote site visits for the smaller locations or those are more difficult to get to, the physical visits on those key sites that we need to see, and then possibly also a sort of client self-assessment in order to get an initial baseline and an initial picture of the risk.
Right.
Yeah, we're actually seeing that, you know, that strategy being certainly discussed and implemented at carriers in the U.S. Again, given the kind of the vastness of the landscape, it's something that's definitely top of mind.
Very good. So we already mentioned some of the challenges, right? So and I would add, you know, that there is something you described before as being able to look at what technology is doing, right? So I add what we call explainability, right? So to make sure that you have the possibility to really see the choices, right? Or the rationale that they're hiding behind, right? So, but there's another topic also that is, you know, growing, that is ethics in AI, right? And also how it is introduced, how it is in your experience. Sorry, that wanted to ask to you if, you know, the ethics in AI is a topic that companies and customers are thinking of and how they are taking care of this rising topic.
So when you're talking about ethics, it's really the use of data, the use of information in a certain way that creates sort of new insights or new information, and really how are people thinking about that, just to make sure I'm kind of clear on the question.
Yeah. So it's, you know, there's a lot of discussion going on about, you know, whether AI is ethics or not, right? So, and ethics in AI, and was wondering, because I'm saying that the topic is creating more and more interest, right? So, and people are also kind of discussing internally, right? So I'm not sure there's like committee, but there's some sort of idea in the area about, you know, defining some sort of group of people that are responsible to verify whether the projects that are being done related to AI are compliant to ethics, right? So, and one example is that, you know, you could have like, computer vision technologies that are able to really detect whether there's people that want to suicide themselves into the rail, right? So and you know, one way of positioning it is that, you know, people were not using this to suicide, but it's not that the suicide are decreasing, right? So it's just the places that are different, right? So also the communication you're doing around some AI results are having an impact in terms of society, right? And I was wondering if this is like a topic that is, you know, growing in interest, because I see that there's some more interest.
So there's certainly, it's certainly a topic of interest from a regulation standpoint in the U.S. You know, a lot of state insurance commissioners are certainly looking at, you know, how models are used, how independent the data is to feed those models so it's non-discriminatory or non-biased. And I think one of the interesting things, and I think Chris mentioned this earlier, is one of the benefits when you look at AI, unlike humans, is you can get a consistency of results, which you're not getting from necessarily a human perspective. That doesn't mean it's right or wrong, it just creates greater consistency. Ultimately, the human has the decision to make on the information that's provided. So, you know, I think that's a great blending of analytics, information, AI, along with that expertise to make sure decisioning isn't automated, but there's far more automation of information gathering and insight collection. And I think that does help to mitigate, you know, some of the fear around, hey, machines are making all these determinations without anyone intervening. Yeah. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It does. So, Chris, Georg, did you have any thoughts on this topic?
Yeah, I know that is my observation as well. I mean, all these tools, these new data sources that we have, they really help us to have better data quality and to help us to analyze these data. But in most of the cases, the decisions still, you know, rest with the underwriter or with the risk engineer. Yeah? So that's my point of view here.
Yeah,
and I think that's a key point. I mean, we've already covered most of the main points around that. I think the other thing really to be mindful of is whenever we're considering any of these new technologies, that these sort of ethics issues are something that we really need to keep front and center of our minds, because we only get one opportunity to present this to, you know, whether that's clients, customers, stakeholders, whoever. But if we mess up there and we're not able to demonstrate those points, then that's, you've lost your audience and you don't have a second opportunity.
Yeah, that would just increase the skepticism that we were discussing before, right? So, and exactly. I think that, you know, also in terms of expectation, things change a lot. So it's no more time to just experiment. It's time to see results, right? So, and, you know, after the let's say the big hype, now we got through the disillusionment, right? So, and things to get to commodities, right? So I think we are in a good timing right now, also because there are good examples, right? So, and also failure from which we learn, right? So, and that's coming also to me to one broader point about insurance and technology in general, right? So, and honestly, you know, the companies you're representing here are really pioneering, right? And really technology driven. But if I have to make a comment about, you know, insurance and technology, this is not, you know, the let's say it's not an historic marriage, right? So it's quite a new relationship if compared to other industry. And to me, there's still a lot of room for improvement, right? So, and I think that, you know, different lever, but that's my point of view. Wanted to understand also your point of view. One is that, you know, probably there wasn't before the urgency to apply technology as it happened for the banking and financial industry, for example. And the second point is that, you know, when it comes to innovation technology, there's like an embedded concept in doing experiences, right? That are including and embedding failure, right? So because you learn from that. And, you know, failure is not like a concept that is very well embraced by the insurance industry, probably because you're risk averse, right? So not risk averse, but, you know, you're risk driven and you are evaluating risk, and that's not probably, but that's my point of view, right? But I see things changed a lot, right? In terms also of, you know, the awareness, it's no more a matter of nice to have, but it's just a must have, right? So if you want to compete, and COVID just, you know, demonstrated it clearly, right? So, and now I'm gonna ask my last preferred question, that is the crystal ball question, right? So, which is, how do you think a risk engineer's work and department itself will look like in 10 years? I'm gonna start with you, Georg.
Yeah, like I said, I think for you know, the large and very complex risks where we really need firsthand information, we will have better tools, but we still will send, that's my view at the moment, send engineers on site, yeah, simply to look behind the scenes and then really to see or to assess risks that are not really public, yeah. Mm-hmm. But I guess that you know, we can add additional information here simply through data mining in the internet, through public sources, yeah, which simply again make our data sets more accurate, yeah, and more complete. I think that is what's coming. The other thing that I see, and I think Chris mentioned that also already, there's also a trend to maybe lock into or use additional information from building or process management systems. Yeah, that is direct facts and data that gives us a clear status, or the current status that gives us information or would give us information about maintenance and inspection statuses. So I think that is also a trend that we are seeing. Working here with colleagues on training, testing, inspections, and think that we could or will most probably also introduce here augmented reality tools. Not only for training, but maybe also for testing, inspection purposes on site to make that. Yeah, and I mean, it was already mentioned. I think AI will simply help us to make faster and more efficient decisions in the future. And under the bottom line, that will help us really to be a little bit more or even more customer centric, yeah, and I think risk engineering in general will play here a massive role. If you think about insurance in general, the insurance policy is a very unique product, yeah. It's a product that you buy that you actually don't want to touch. Yeah.
You don't want to use it. Yeah.
Yes. I mean, but this is the point. A lot of policyholders, they are not really interested in all the details. Yeah. So the real differentiator is really the service that you provide to your customer. Yeah. And that. In a lot of cases, that is very closely connected to risk engineering. Yeah.
Chris, your perspective, so your crystal ball in 10 years. So
probably handle
this panel in 10 years, so be aware that I will invite you 10 years to look at the predictions.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I think a couple of the points we've touched upon already, I think the way that we approach services is going to change. I think, as I mentioned earlier on in the call, we're going to have more of a tiered approach, making up that client self-assessment piece, then that remote survey piece, and then finally the actual physical visits. So we're going to have more of a kind of a pyramid approach, if you like, in terms of how we actually look at risks and how we evaluate them. from a technology standpoint, I think we're going to see more technology being brought in. I mean, we've already spoken about things like the AI solutions and the evaluation of reports. Now, obviously, the more we use these systems, the more intelligent they become, the more accuracy we can expect to get out of them. And that's obviously going to help us to make better and quicker decisions. Also on that, I think we're going to see more monitoring of sites. So we speak about this 24/7 IoT monitoring, kind of like black boxes that you can install into your facilities. And that's really going to help us because we can then not only view risks and hazards as they're coming up, but we can start plotting trends and we can then say, okay, something's not quite right there, in the same way that you would have your electrical inspections every year, and you can almost predict losses before they occur and put into place measures that can help to identify and address them. Obviously, on the back of that, you've also got benefits like carbon footprint reduction, for example, because you're actually making sure that the buildings are as efficient as possible. And then I think the last point that's really important to consider as well is how we're presenting all of this data back to the clients. So the way that we are collecting it is clearly changing, but how are we actually giving that data back to the clients and presenting it to them? And I think we're going to see a lot of changes there. I mean, the standard product of a risk engineering report that's 50 pages has been the way it's always been done for quite a number of years. And I think as we move through and we see more advanced client solutions and things like risk management portals being developed, we're going to be able to maybe look at how those solutions are presented and what would be a better way of presenting it to clients. So, for example, can we cut down on huge blocks of text and use videos in order to demonstrate key areas, presenting the facts and figures that the clients really want and they need to understand their risk and their business, but without having to go through the process of writing long, wordy reports.
Very good. That's your prediction?
So I think I agree with, you know, both Gary and Chris in their perspectives. I think the biggest shift is going to be more of a continuous monitoring, as Chris mentioned. So rather than it being periodic based, the more that either buildings or employees can be instrumented to prevent losses, to prevent, you know, issues from occurring. I think that's directionally, you know, 10 years is a long time in tech terms. And I think, you know, when you think about that, if I think back to 10 years ago, the process was so different than it is today. And it may not feel that way, but very, very different. And I think that orientation around risk mitigation is going to be a very, very important one. And ensuring that customers can take action as well on their own to mitigate those risks prior to the losses occurring, I think is going to be huge. Data is critical to making that actionable, however, right? So there's an alerting certainly mechanisms, but understanding how those different types of situations present themselves in terms of losses is really going to make that information much more actionable than just being flooded with all kinds of alerts. And I do think that's what is important from a customer standpoint. The other thing I would suggest is all forms of data, whether it's visual, voice, written form, are going to be used to actually support that risk assessment. So historically, if you look back 10 years ago, it was information gathered and assessed by the risk engineer, and that information collection was somewhat limited. As you start to think about the broader range of information that's available in different sources and different forms and the technology that can process that, I do think that is going to make a material shift for certainly the leaders from an industry standpoint. So that's kind of what I see.
Good. So I just wrote everything. So be aware that in 10 years I'll be back, right? I think that were good, very good prediction. So it's time to open some questions from the audience. So there's a lot of questions. That's a very good sign. So Probably we won't cover all of them. So to all the attendees, we will reach out to you with the answers, right? So be assured that you will receive the answer. So let me start with the first question. That is for you, Chris. So I love that remote auditing is finally being talked about and actually being used as well. Have you as an insurance been able to leverage the data that was captured in order to get a better view of the risk the clients face? Are these solutions provided by AXA XL, or do you rely on third parties and homebrew solution? Look, if there's some strict information you can't disclose, of course, we are mindful, right? So, Chris?
Yeah, sure, of course. So I think that the question here is really looking at the remote risk surveys, and those surveys that we are doing, there's two different levels of them. So we've got the initial, we refer to it as a risk scanning approach, which is where we devise a questionnaire that sends out to sites. They're able to complete the questionnaire, so somebody on the site at the client's end completes that, and then they send it back to us and we're able to do an analysis. So that's your first sort of level of data gathering. The second level is what we would refer to as a remote risk dialogue. And that's something that's really become a lot more popular during the current pandemic. And that's where we're using the risk consultants, the same risk consultants that would go out and do the normal surveys, but they'll set up a remote call. So that can be via a video conference, a Teams chat, whatever. And they're able to gather that information. And from that, we then look to produce a report similar to what we would have from a normal risk survey. Now, of course, there's limitations to using these methods. If you're looking at a first-time survey, a detailed occupancy, then it's always going to be preferable to actually physically be on site. But there is still a lot of information that we're able to gather using those methods. So to answer the question there, yes, ourselves that are collecting that information and processing it.
Good. So let me pick another question. Thank you, Chris. How much IoT information and what type of such data do you capture on an average in the risk engineering data processing risk selection work? Do you think the data is available enough to work with effective and with clear goal? Derek, are you using IoT in the processes? In are the data in terms of quality of quality enough?
Not at the moment. I think that can still be further developed. Yeah, that is IoT data. I think we are just at the start of using these data for our direct analysis.
Got it. Okay. Let me. Yeah, that's like interesting question. Open-ended question. Will the evolution in automation and AI be driven by in-house research and development team or by the bolt-on acquisition or specialist insurtechs? I guess the answer is it depends, right? I don't know.
I think it's all of it. You know, I think you need the internal expertise to drive innovation. You need the external tech thought leadership to really figure out how to take advantage of it. So I really believe, and it's really what we have seen from an insurtech standpoint, it's the combination of insurance expertise at carriers or distributors combined with tech that can be very innovative in creating opportunities and solving problems. So I would say it's all of it.
Good. So I think that, you know, we are done basically. So I'm mindful of the time of everyone. So given that, you know, it's beginning of the year and a lot of plans to be completed, right? So there's still some question we didn't cover, so we will answer it by email to all the questions, right? So I'm gonna thank you really heartfully, all the panelists. So Deb, Chris, Georg, it was a pleasure to me to moderate this discussion. I hope you enjoyed it, right? So, and thank you everyone.
Thank you.
Thank you.